powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, this hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by the Pro Club. If you're just now joining us, we were talking about a cut from Matt Hasselbeck, who was on with Mike Salk earlier today about how the Seahawks ended their season. And it surprised me a little bit because we've heard a ton of positivity, but I actually really liked what Matt had to say. So I'm going to I'm doing something here. We're going to have Mina Kimes, ESPN's Mina Kimes. She joins us right now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Hello, Mina. How are you?
Hey, guys. I'm good.
Good. I'm going to actually play this sound for you, Mina, and then we'll have you react to it so we loop you into the conversation as well. So this is what Matt had to say about the end of the Seahawks season.
You got
to
have that day or that time where you live in reality and you also, you know, the facts are the facts. I mean, you could say the exact same thing as you could say, you know, we scored 10 points against the Rams. We lost to the third string quarterback in Chicago and a team that fired their coach. And then we beat Detroit with a backup quarterback. And then we beat Arizona. We look great, but this is also a team that lost four of their last five.
Well,
they're in a downward spiral. So it's like, it's both.
Yeah.
Like, yes, the positivity, I'm all for it. It's a great way to finish strong. At the same time, like, this is the Seattle Seahawks. There's a championship sort of standard there.
Matt saying, look, you have to live in reality, and the Seahawks fell short of their standard. Mina, it feels like the Seahawks ended with their best performance of the season. It was really fun to talk about. There were a lot of great moments, but I've been genuinely surprised to see how much like anger or frustration there's been when you talk about places they need to improve. But do you kind of share Matt's sentiment?
I do, actually. And I just finished watching the Arizona game. It took me a second to get to that. But, like, you know, you really have to look at the competition down that final stretch and look at also some of what they accomplished with a grain of salt. I think you also have to look at the competition during the parts where they struggled against, I don't know, Andy Dalton. And factor that in. Just because you finished strong doesn't mean the season was successful by any stretch of the imagination. And you got to be really honest about your strengths and weaknesses. I still think this is a team that struggles in the trenches on both sides of the ball, and that needs to be addressed on both sides of the ball. I also think, you know, I saw some really nice performances from players in the secondary and cornerbacks. But again, competition, competition, competition. That does not mean that they don't need to drastically improve those to be improve that area to be a contender.
Yeah, I mean, it is one of those things where Stacy and I have kind of been on an island here in this town, you know, really pointing to those things and really addressing that that has been the area of focus that should be the priority for this organization in order to progress forward. You know, Pete Carroll afterwards riding that emotional momentum, I would say, you know, coming out and saying that they are very close to being a championship caliber team. What is your reaction to Pete Carroll's words there?
I don't agree. I mean, I think they're much better than their record this year. And it's, as Pete has said many times, losing your starting quarterback in the middle of the season and then, you know, having him come back clearly injured, it really, really has to impact how you look at this team and recognize the challenges they were up against. But again, like on an individual basis, looking at matchups, looking at the performance from players on both sides of the ball, there clearly are a lot of holes. This pass rush came on strong at the end. It was great to see, you know, some of the role players and like the Carlos Dunlap being dominant, but it frankly was not good enough during this season. And then the offensive line, again, you know, you saw some decent performances. You saw a very obviously incredible run game, but you got to consider competition. And this isn't to be gloomy and say this team can't compete next year. They can, but what I'm saying, what I believe, is that the roster that they have is not a championship roster.
So, Mina, how do you change that champion? How do you change that into a championship roster? What are some of the areas that you want to see them seriously address heading into this next offseason?
Mm. Yeah, well, I think offensively, it'd be really nice to keep Rashad, to keep, well, a few players, but I think the offensive line, particularly right side center, is something you got to seriously look at. especially just kind of given Russell Wilson's aging curve. Look, it was awesome to see him looking more elusive in that final game and scrambling and using the legs the way so many of us remember. But, you know, you also have to prepare for a future where maybe that's not the case in every game and against every defense. And as he evolves as a quarterback, you can't treat him like 23-year-old Russell Wilson. He does need more time in the pocket. So I think that's something I would focus on. You know, I was really disappointed this year. I wanted them to take Creed Humphrey during the draft. I think that's something they obviously need to consider addressing, even without a high draft pick, which is disappointing. And then defensively, there's some personnel issues. You know, some of the young cornerbacks I thought really flashed, but that's still an area I would consider. We'll see what happens with Quandre Diggs' health. But pass rush, again, it just wasn't good enough. And then also I would say on that side of the ball, you need a defensive coordinator who knows, who can help them figure out not only how to generate more pressure, but also use Jamal Adams. I think that was kind of one of the biggest failures of this season. He is going to be part of this football team. He's an important part, and I think that's something that really needs to get figured out moving forward.
Jake has looked at Green Bay as an example of like one kind of path Seattle could take as far as, you know, Aaron Rodgers struggling and then they bounce back and they solidify the run game and they have kind of this unique balanced approach. And I know everyone and their mom has pointed to Kansas City as like, oh, you could just take that approach. So there's always other teams that people point to and they say, what about that road? Is there another team that you look at and you say, you know, Seattle could find this kind of success if they just tapped into the right things?
You know, I would say Tennessee jumps out as a team where there's some parallels. It's a team that's, you know, very balanced with a quarterback who also is very accurate and aggressive off of play action. Some really strong skilled players who are also really good in that system. And then the other side of the ball, I think they've really, really improved their front four. Still some issues in the secondary, but you know, I think that's a team where I'm not saying they should run every early down, and obviously, you know, they don't have Derrick Henry on their roster, but I do think there's some similarities there. You know, in terms of like how that roster is built, there's some players that they could add to be a little bit more comparable to the Titans.
Mina, there's been a lot of conversation about obviously the drama of Russell Wilson with the Seahawks organization and where this whole thing is going towards. And, you know, Pete Carroll was very adamant, you know, after in his press conferences, post-game and on Monday about, hey, my job is secure, John Schneider's job is secure, and Russell Wilson is going to be the quarterback here. Do you view it as simple as that?
Well, I think that's the most likely outcome. A lot of this is kind of reading tea leaves, or I guess reading the amount of money that they've invested into two of those three people. Well, all three, rather. And also just kind of, you know, what Wilson has been, I guess, the way he's been talking about his future. He does sound like, you know, he wants to stay, but he also obviously has chosen his words carefully and says he wants to stay and win Super Bowls. And I don't know how he feels about the roster, but I imagine there's some areas he would like to upgrade, starting with the offensive line. To me, you know, assuming that happens and all three of those parties stay in place, there does need to be a change in approach. I would say defensive coaching, which I alluded to, and then in terms of roster construction, really aggressively targeting some of those areas. And that doesn't mean like swinging big with a gigantic trade, but perhaps restructuring certain contracts so that you can add free agents who will be impactful. You know, and then of course you'd like to see them have more success in the draft, although last couple of years look a little bit better than the previous five.
Hey, I know we've been talking about it, but I always go to your conversation when you kind of looked at the top picks and you mentioned people around the league outside of Seattle were really surprised because they're not tracking it as closely to see the misses on especially their first two picks. I see so many questions every time we talk about drafting of like, well, what's really the hit rate that other teams have? Have you done much research to like look at other teams or kind of the success that consistently winning franchises have had with the draft?
Well, you know, people sometimes look at, like, how many Pro Bowlers did they draft,
right?
Kind of imperfect. But, like, there's just no way you can look at Seattle's draft history over the last 10 years and think it's been successful. I'm sorry. Like, you know, there's been a couple of nice, you know, obviously Lockett and Metcalf. And, you know, Jordan Brooks had a nice season this year. Damian Lewis is the starter. And then Daryl Taylor kind of came on. But just so many misses, so much draft spent on players who are not useful. And then, you know, these gigantic trades that haven't worked out, whereas some of the later round trades, like Quandre Diggs, have been Dwayne Brown, I would say, you know, have been successful. But I just go back to the Titans. I think, you know, like that's a team where you actually have had more success in the draft. And it's not a – I don't think the Titans are like the Packers and the Chiefs where they're just so loaded, but they've been able to find impact players at certain positions in a way that I think Seattle is not.
Mina, you know, one of the other things that really stood out to me as well is Pete Carroll also having this recognition of – yeah, I mean, when we played the NFC West, there was more star talent on these other teams than what we had, yeah. And that's something that needs to be fixed. How much farther are some of these other teams ahead of Seattle? What is the differentiating factor? Is it just simply the star players, or is it the depth that you were just alluding to?
I think there's some variation. Like, I look at a team like San Francisco, and I think coaching has just been so impactful there. I mean, that defensive line, you know, obviously they have Nick Bosa and Seattle doesn't, and that makes a big difference. But year after year, their ability to get contributions from guys like, I was just breaking down this upcoming game, Samson Ebukam and Arden Key, that's not something we're seeing in Seattle these days. We used to see it. I think actually Seattle used to be phenomenal at taking free agent defensive linemen. And Alwood's been really good, I'm saying. But like in terms of the pass rush, you know, that's a team where it just like it feels like coaching and then, of course, their offensive scheme really elevates them. And I think Arizona, I don't actually view as being that far ahead of Seattle. I think some things just kind of broke their way, obviously the Hopkins trade. And then the Rams, their approach to team building has just been so different. But I do think it's worth noting, like, their big swing was Jalen Ramsey. Seattle's big swing was Jamal Adams. I think we can both agree which one of those worked out better.
Oof. She is one of our absolute favorites, ESPN's Mina Kimes, joining us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Mina, thanks so much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Love you guys. Bye.
See ya.
Thanks, Mina. See ya.
I think it's nice that Mina said, I love you, Stacey. Bye. Like, I feel like that's
Stacey, no. That's
love
not.
You guys.
I heard love you, comma, bye. That's what I heard. And it was
gosh, Stacey, I did not expect you to be. I can't remember her name, but just got done watching
Mina,
The Bachelor with
Mina. I love you too.
With Brooke last night, and you know,
oh, what is
one
Brooke
crazy
think?
Girl?
Oh, yes. Oh, there's two
man.
Of them, Cassidy and Shanae, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, Shanae. That's what it
we'll
was.
We'll discuss
yes.
this during the break, so you can pass my messages to Brooke here. We don't have time. Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, Joe Judge fired as head coach of the Giants yesterday after two miserable but hilarious seasons. What is the real headline?
Much like his former players, Joe Judge also desperate to rejoin the Giants organization. If you guys remember Joe Judge, gosh, when was that? It was like during a really
like a week
wild
ago.
Press conference not 2 weeks too long ago. Where he claimed that he got calls regularly, twice a week, he's hearing from former players who wish that they were still with the Giants. And people were like, okay, Joe. Okay. I bet that's yep, what all your exes say about you.
Correct. That's exactly right. You know, no one wants to leave Joe Judge.
Absolutely
no
nobody.
Wait, this is, you know, this is the appropriate ending. And quite honestly, I'm surprised ownership dragged it on in the way that they did and allowed Joe Judge to try and go to ownership and just sit there and make his own case. And I'm sure it was a lot of the same things. No one wants to leave me. We're so close to being a team that is building a championship caliber team. And there's nothing that you could point to with their organization right now that would indicate any of that. This was the right move. You needed to rip the Band-Aid off. You needed to move on from Dave Gettleman. You should have done it a few years ago. And you definitely needed to move on from Joe Judge. Now, this is going to be a total rebuild and restart for the Giants unless they're able to find some true impact at the quarterback position. I just don't see that happening for them this offseason. So this is a complete start over. And we'll see if the Giants can try to get it right this time around. But definitely the right move to move on from Joe Judge. And, you kind of wonder what Joe Judge's career is going to be from this point forward. Maybe goes back to New England, maybe becomes an assistant coach again. But this is a guy that I never foresee having another opportunity as a head coach again.
Did you guys see that the Giants told all media outlets today to not carry the John Mara press conference live because they were afraid that there was going to be a question that made the organization look bad?
What?
Yeah, they didn't allow.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, they did not stream it on their website.
That's lame. They didn't
let NFL Network take it. They didn't let their flagship station WFAN take it.
A word I can't say on air, but that's ridiculous.
Yeah, they allowed them to play it after the fact, after everything had happened and after all the quotes had been said, but nothing live.
You're a business, and people have... they've been covering you. That's what that relationship has been. You fired your head coach, and you're afraid that in a press conference you're going to say something wrong. That's the point of a press conference. It's for press access, to be able to ask questions. I, you know what, Curtis? That actually makes sense, because I saw someone else tweeting that the Maras were taking umbrage with the idea that they had like too much influence within the organization. And it's like, you do have it. You just fired the head coach. You have sole influence.
Well, like, then somebody
the
tweeted
owner is.
Out.
Why are you afraid of that look?
Somebody tweeted out the power structure in the Giants organization. And if your last name isn't Mara or Tisch, you're not anywhere close to holding a front office position in that team.
Well, what do you think that not airing it or trying to mask anything does? Everyone knows the truth. I mean, it's not like nepotism is new territory for any one NFL organization. You're one of the most storied families within the NFL. It makes sense. I don't know why you're hiding it.
Headline rewrites.
That's crazy.
That's wild.
That is crazy.
Wild. Now I have to hear the press conference. I have to know what was said.
Headline number two, Amazon is eyeing Marshawn Lynch to host a Thursday Night Football studio show. What's the real headline?
Well, I never thought to put Marshawn Lynch on my Amazon wish list, but here we are. Because you know what, Jake? I would absolutely watch this. No hesitation whatsoever. And now all I want is not only for this to happen, but for there to be a Thursday night Seahawks game where Marshawn Lynch has the deal done. He is hosting this Thursday Night Football studio show, and he has on former Seahawks guests. It's all I want.
Oh, it would be great. And I'm sure there would be a lot of unique and interesting conversation that would happen on that particular show. But this is one that I'm intrigued by. Reason why is because Marshawn Lynch is a fun personality. But the one thing that I would be curious about is how could they make that show structured for Marshawn? He's got to play the role of the host, right? And so he's got to, you know, take you from, you know, one segment to the next, one interview to the next, and really keep it on point. And I believe Marshawn Lynch is very capable of doing that. But, you know, I'm also very curious as to what that looks like. So you're going to get a very open, fun, unfiltered version of Marshawn Lynch, but also, how does he, you know, move things along in the way that the Mannings were able to with each of the talking points that they wanted? And I could see this very much becoming like a Howard Stern, a Joe Rogan type of show where you get guests on, and because you're around Marshawn Lynch and his energy and I don't know if you want it just because you want to impress Marshawn Lynch or whatever the case may be, but you might get guests to be more open with you than ever before and answer questions more openly than ever before. So I would be very curious to see what that looks like, but it certainly would have to be with the big voice guy beforehand saying viewer discretion is advised or whatever, you know, in terms of language, because, you know, an unfiltered Marshawn Lynch, that's something you just don't necessarily want your kids, you know, hanging around and listening to what Marshawn's gonna have to say.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, the Kraken look to stop their skid tonight against the Dallas Stars. What's the real headline?
Before picking it up again against the St. Louis Blues. Oh, just kidding. I'm just kidding. I know it felt harsh. It felt mean, but it hasn't been the best inaugural season ever for a team, specifically for this team, the Seattle Kraken. Now, there's some self-inflicted wounds. There's some completely unforeseen causes, like goaltending being the most obvious one that absolutely no one saw coming. And then there's just the idea that, like, well, You know what? Maybe we all should have been looking at some previous expansion franchises and less at the Vegas Knights. Either way, there's still plenty to learn about the Kraken this season, and that's why we speak with 710 Kraken insider Andy Eyde regularly to get the latest on the team and what we could learn and where the roots and foundation are being set for building forward. But if one thing is clear after this season, it's that the foundation is still being set and the building is going to have to be something that happens in the future as opposed to this year.
Right, and I would definitely agree with that, and that is definitely a bummer because there were high expectations for this year and what this team could look like, but this team has just not been very good. I mean, that's just the honest truth of it. They have not been good. Goaltending has been disappointing. Defense has been disappointing. And this has been a year of more of, hey, this is an expansion team. And we're still trying to figure out who we want to be and what we want to become. And now you go into the next year, and to me, that's really where you start to be a little bit more critical, in my opinion. You're still building forward. You're still trying to see where the development is, but you need to see the identity of the team start to form and start to see the plan and the vision come together. Year one, okay, we're getting our feel, we're feeling everything out. You know, at the even at the Kraken game, we're trying new things. We're trying to figure out what our our chants are going to be, what works, what doesn't. There's a lot of newness for year one. But year two, it's not that I expect them to be competing for a Stanley Cup, but I want to see that identity formulate and what the plan is from Ron Francis. You can save money, you can do that, but you can only do it for so long to where you start to get people wondering how this organization is going to be run and ultimately what the success of this franchise is going to be.
All right, lots still to come in this show. Hype Train, one of my absolute favorite games that we play, coming up at 1:15. Before we get to any of that, though, the Rams bring a well-known player, a surprising player, out of retirement and more from around the NFL. We'll take a look at the latest headlines next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
Don't forget, you can listen to us on the go or catch up with the show if you miss it. Subscribe to the Jake and Stacy podcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Please don't forget to rate and review if you do subscribe. Let's take a look around the rest of the NFL this hour of Jake and Stacy, brought to you by the Pro Club. The Rams are bringing 37-year-old Eric Weddle out of retirement. He'll replace Jordan Fuller. Fuller suffered a season-ending injury in the Rams' loss to the 49ers on Sunday. He'll also join the Rams in the playoffs. That first game, by the way, is a Monday night wild card, very weird to say that, in LA. They're hosting the Arizona Cardinals. Weddle first retired after the 2019 season. Very weird to see Weddle coming back. Also, how about this one, just in general, so that you guys all know, the Rams secondary pretty banged up right now. Taylor Rapp is injured. Now, Weddle retiring initially cleared the way for Rapp to be promoted to a regular starter, but Rapp might not even play in this one. Jake, what are your real expectations for Eric Weddle, 37 years old, heading into the playoffs for the first time in any game since 2019.
I have no idea what to make of this. Eric Weddle hasn't played in years. He's 37. He has been a longtime great player in this league and a tremendous safety with great instincts and great knowledge. And obviously he's familiar with Sean McVay and the Rams, but he's not familiar necessarily with this particular defense. And he's a smart guy and he'll be able to pick that up, but this is, you talk about being in bad ways and really struggling to field a team together, and you're calling Eric Weddle. I mean, I'm assuming he's in tremendous shape and he's been continued to work out. I mean, that's the only reason why you're going to bring him in, not just for any game during the regular season, but for the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Win or go home, Stacy. So I'm going to be very curious, very excited to see what Eric Weddle looks like. It's a tremendous story. It would be kind of a bummer if he went out there and just was not very good. But what other expectations do you have for him? They're just hoping they can get by having him out there on the field, and hoping that his leadership and all the knowledge that he has will get him through the game.
All right. Well, the Denver Broncos just took another step toward potentially being sold as a franchise. There was a judge ruling that the ex-owner's family members can't buy back a portion of the Broncos as this kind of right of first refusal agreement. It's the same kind of thing we saw with, what was the team? It was an NBA team we were looking at for this one. It was what A-Rod was dealing with.
Timberwolves,
where there's this idea of like a right of first refusal that before you do something, someone else might get a say in it, like a former owner. So that's been nullified. A judge said, no, you can't buy back the portion of this. So it just kind of additionally clears a little bit more room for the Broncos to potentially be sold. It's going to be weird if that ends up happening, although I wouldn't imagine, you know, relocation or anything. But obviously with a new owner comes someone new in charge, and that might mean changes.
Yeah, it does. There's no question about that. And I believe that when you're talking about the Denver Broncos, this is going to be a very, very important development for this organization. And there's been talk about maybe John Elway, Peyton Manning put together something with an ownership group and try to make it happen. I don't know if you can find enough money to pull that one off. That would be one I would be very curious about. But ultimately, the ownership group, as we know, is such an important factor into how organizations are run and what decisions are made and what are their thoughts in terms of how involved they want to be, what influence do they want to have on roster decisions and all of that. So it really puts everything in the air for the Denver Broncos, and the Denver's not in danger of being moved from their location, but it does put the organization in a very difficult bind in terms of what the expectation is, how things are going to be run moving forward, and that's a tough spot to be in.
All right, former Seahawk Richard Sherman will be watching the Bucks wild card game from the sideline. He's been placed on the injured reserve because it's his second stint on the injured reserve. That now ends his season, so he's done for the year. By the way, he was placed on the reserve with an Achilles injury. That's not his first Achilles injury with really Seattle or I think San Francisco. He also might have been dealing with one there. Now, given Sherman's age, given his injury history, it is one of those moments where you wonder if you've seen him on a field for the last time. Richard Sherman hasn't said anything about it. I'm sure if he wants to play, he'll be determined to play and he'll get back out there. But the older a player gets and the more he deals with an injury, especially if it's a recurring injury, you do wonder, is it the last time you've seen Richard Sherman?
I'm not going to count out Sherm in terms of what his desires are to continue to keep playing the game. If he wants to, he can find a way to get back. But at this stage of his career, with the injuries that he has dealt with, I don't see Richard Sherman playing another down again. That's just my opinion right now. And I believe that there is so much more for Richard Sherman life after football. And we know, obviously, unfortunately, the struggles that he has had battling with that and many other things in his life. But I think Richard Sherman has great things ahead of him. And if he so chooses to come to that conclusion, I think there's great things that he can do in terms of the community, in terms of charity work, in terms of, you know, giving back to the game as a coach or being a broadcaster if he wanted to be. So I do think there's great things ahead for Richard Sherman, and I just don't see them on the football field at this point in time. This was a player that one of the best to ever do it at the cornerback spot. He's one of the best cornerbacks to ever play this game. And obviously nothing but love for Sherman here with his time here in Seattle. But dealing with the injuries that he had and knowing that he was on the outside looking in, this situation certainly did not help his case.
All right. Well, we were just talking about Joe Judge being fired after two very weird losing seasons in New York. And we mentioned that press conference that's happening with John Mara. John Mara maybe didn't want all of that made public. Well, part of it is. I mean, part of it's genuinely an interview. So this from NFL.com. John Mara was asked, hey, is this the most embarrassed you've ever been of this franchise? Over the entirety of your association with the franchise, which has been your life, is this the most embarrassed you've ever been? And he said, quote, honestly, I would have to say yes. Yes, it is. I kept thinking during the season that we'd hit rock bottom, and then each week it got a little worse. Honestly, I'm not proud of saying this, but if I'm going to be 100% honest, I would have to say yes. Now, here's my question for you, Jake. Here's my question. If you're the owner of a franchise and you've had 8 losing seasons in your last 9 years, and you haven't had the same head coach for all of those, Joe Judge was there for 2 seasons, at what point do you point to yourself and say, am I not hiring the right people? Is something I'm doing messing things up? Am I part of the problem? If you're the owner, I mean, doesn't it kind of start and end with you?
Yes, it does. I mean, you're the one that employed these people. You're the one that continued to allow Dave Gettleman to be in charge of your roster construction. You're the one that went out and hired Joe Judge. So ultimately, it falls on you as the owner in terms of what you have accepted and what direction you have wanted to go in. And I believe that he can only point to himself and point the finger at him and also be the one that says, I'm going to be part of the solution. This is embarrassing. This is not what Giants fans deserve, and I'm going to work tirelessly to make sure that the Giants are an organization that fans can be proud of again. And that, to me, is something that I feel is very, very clear when it comes to John Mara, and he's right. It continued to get worse and worse and worse, mm-hmm. and the epitome of that is the 3rd-and-7, quarterback sneak call of Joe Judge in that final game. I mean, that, it, to me, was dead on rock bottom.
All right, last story here, and we're actually coming back to Seattle for this one. Backup quarterback Geno Smith, we said earlier this week, was arrested on suspicion of driving under the influence. That was after he was pulled over for going 96 miles per hour in a 60 mile per hour zone. According to ESPN, he was also, quote, driving erratically across several lanes of traffic. That's from the arrest report obtained by ESPN. Here's my question. It's more so about Geno Smith's future with Seattle. He's a pending free agent, and about what Seattle does at backup quarterback. Let's assume they keep Russell Wilson. Okay. Who knows if they keep Geno Smith or not, but this feels like a position they got to make sure they solidify. Are there any other names they've been linked to, whether they're guys that have been on the practice squad that you could see them turning to as a backup?
I mean, Jacob Eason is the other quarterback that has been with the team for a significant portion of the year, and so that would be the obvious name that you would turn to next. We'll see what the organization really truly feels and thinks of Jacob Eason and the job that he has done, learning and developing with this group. And that would be the name that comes to mind first and foremost. And then after that, I do believe that they're going to look at their veteran options. They're going to look at other guys that could come in and compete with somebody like Jacob Eason. So that to me is where I think that the quarterback situation will end up going heading into this year. Geno Smith might be able to be a part of that again, but obviously this development does not help his case.
Now, Jake, you're completely eliminating a trade for Tyler Huntley. That's what you're forgetting.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Thanks for
that's right.
The music from Curtis, that was actually the perfect comedic timing for Jake at that moment.
Yeah, that's exactly right. How dare I? How dare I forget Tyler Huntley, that possibility? Until we get the word about what Russell Wilson, his desires are definitively, I won't even begin to talk about Tyler Huntley.
All right, we were going to get to the defense, the Seahawks defense. We're going to continue that conversation, talking about the pass rush, how they can improve that, what they need to do. And then we got a little sidetrack. There was a report from Michael Silver that both John Schneider and Pete Carroll would be meeting with Jody Allen, and that some clarity on the Seahawks, Pete Carroll and John Schneider, could come today. That report was 2 hours ago, so it sidetracked us a little bit. We talked about that with Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times. If you missed it, it'll be on the Jake and Stacey podcast. And obviously, if there are more developments here, we'll be looking at it. I don't think we're expecting any big change or these two guys to move on. Our understanding has always been that they'll be here, but we'll see what happens there. So I want to get back to the conversation about the defense. Let's cycle back. We're going to get back to what we were talking about earlier. How do they improve this pass rush? What's the most important thing they need to do in 2022? That's next. What went up? What was up with the Seahawks pass rush? I mean, it was supposed to be great. I mean, an underrated unit. It's not like you had, Washington football team's defense heading into 2021, but then again, neither did Washington football team. And instead, Seattle's defense ended up, I want to say, like switching gears, changing up their approach midway through the season to try to help out the secondary. Jake, we talked about that a little bit earlier in the show. And when we had Bob Condotta on of the Seattle Times, we said, hey, what's one of the most important pieces they need to add? He said an edge rusher. It's one of the things Mina Kimes looked at when you talk about impactful players that you need to add. And it's one of the most important positions you can have in football. If the quarterback is the most important guy, the second most important guy you can have, and it's why he's the highest paid guy on defense, is usually the guy that can stop the quarterback, that can get to him, that can sack him and bring him down. The Seahawks don't necessarily have that guy right now. Carlos Dunlap, probably their best edge rusher, and was kind of absent for the middle part of the season for a lack of snaps, and came on at the end of the season, ended up leading the team in sacks. But Jake, safe to say, looking at the stat sheet and looking back at all these games, they did not have the pass rush we all thought they might heading into the season. Why?
Yeah, it certainly did not live up to expectations, right? And you saw this group become one of the better pass rushing units to finish the year in 2020. And you thought, man, this is something you can really build off of. And this is something, if you make some tweaks and you make some additions, Daryl Taylor, if you could get some production out of him, you're bringing in Kerry Hyder Jr., who had 10.5 sacks. And all right, we're going to build. We're going to move towards something positive here. Well, the start of the year, that pass rush was nowhere to be found. The secondary was a disaster. I mean, and you couldn't figure out, was the problem because you had no pass rush, or was the problem because the secondary was so bad that it gave no time for the pass rush to get home, right? So there was all of this conversation. And then in the middle of the year, what they decided to do was focus on their run defense and focus on how can we take our big boys and in Al Woods and Brian Monet and Puna Ford and make them the feature of this defense by putting them on the field at the same time on first and second down. And then it allows your linebackers to roam and run. And then you have to change the way your edge defenders and Daryl Taylor, Benson Mayoa, Carlos Dunlap, your pass rushers, the way that they play. And so that adjustment that they made in the middle of the season, it worked well in terms of stopping the run and stopping that weak point of your defense, but it drastically hurt and impacted your ability to rush the passer.
And that's why
Carlos Dunlap, at the end of the season, Stacey, was really frustrated. And you can hear him when we interviewed him. He said, look, I just didn't get opportunities to do what I do best. And when they gave me those shots and opportunities, I made the most of it.
I'm going to interrupt to ask questions, kind of how they come up, because I'm wondering if some people have them as you're talking. But you said the way they change it, going with that bare front, the defensive tackles are the focus on first and second down, trying to stop the run. Great. They ended up doing that pretty effectively as the season went on. But you said it changed the way the defensive ends had to play. How did it change the way they played?
Well, they played more as 3-4 outside linebackers, meaning in a lot of cases, they weren't rushing the passer, Stacey. They were dropping into coverage. You saw Benson Mayoa, Carlos Dunlap. You even saw some of the defensive tackles dropping into coverage a lot in the course of a game, which is not what you want to do. It's not what Carlos Dunlap or Daryl Taylor or any of those guys want to do. They want to rush the passer. And so it limited the amount of snaps you're getting Benson Mayoa, Carlos Dunlap, Daryl Taylor in terms of actually rushing the passer and you know, pinning their ears back and getting a chance to attack the quarterback, which is what they were originally brought in to do. And that is, not only are you limiting snap counts from Carlos Dunlap, you're limiting the amount of snaps that he's actually rushing the passer, because you're electing to have him and Benson Mayoa drop into coverage. So that is another factor into it. And when you gave them more opportunities, particularly Carlos Dunlap, Daryl Taylor, Rasheem Green as well, where they rushed from their traditional spots at defensive end, Rasheem Green as a 5 technique or as a 3 technique defensive tackle, that's where you saw those guys thrive and really perform. And you got to see production out of them in terms of sacks, in terms of tackles for loss. And that, to me, was one of the big missteps of the year, was not unlocking that pass rush better or sooner. And you saw how effective the defense could be when you saw them consistently be able to harass the quarterback, and they certainly made life difficult for Kyler Murray in that last game.
Yeah, it makes me wonder how that's going to change the acquisition of personnel and whether they're going to continue to build on that approach. Like, maybe Pete Carroll and Ken Norton Jr. loved that approach. Maybe they were like, you know what, we found that stopping the run, you had some explosive plays leaking through, especially if you had a banged up secondary, but ultimately we tried to limit time of possession. Like, let's say that was part of their goal too, and we know the stats on it, but let's say that they decide that they want to keep going with that. It makes you wonder, like, you have Al Woods hitting free agency, if they're going to look to acquire a big stout run defender before they go get an elite edge rusher, or if that was a means to an end. They're like, we're just trying to find something to be great at. We know who we want to be defensively, though, and we want to get back to that in 2022. It makes me wonder what their approach is going to be in 2022 in terms of, where do they invest? What's the big addition they make on defense? If it's an edge rusher, I don't see why you wouldn't want to make sure he's on the field as much as you can.
You're certainly right about that. And they can address this in the draft. They could go after one of the, you know, more dynamic defensive linemen that are out there in the draft that will be around in round two. But I believe that there's two areas that you have to improve when it comes to your pass rush. You need impact players. And so obviously the focus goes to your edge. That's why Chandler Jones to me is an obvious name that if I'm Seattle, if I'm Pete Carroll, I'm John Schneider, I am really, really looking into how I can land Chandler Jones and convince him to be a part of this team. And if that is the case, I think your pass rush, soars exponentially. It makes somebody like Carlos Dunlap better. It makes somebody like Daryl Taylor better. But the other thing that you have to mention, I'm glad you brought up Al Woods, is that the one thing that they did not have this year was legitimate pass rush from the interior. Your defensive tackles, as good as Al Woods played, he had 1.5 sacks. Ryan Monet, 1.5 sacks. Puna Ford had 2 sacks. You didn't get enough production from your interior pass rush. And another veteran name that I would love to see them try to add that I think would increase their defensive line tremendously would be Akeem Hicks from the Chicago Bears. Now, this last year, it wasn't as productive as he usually has. There was a lot of issues, 1 injury, but not something significant. And 2,
what'd you make of this? I was a little surprised.
Being very frustrated with the coaching staff, go figure, right? So just the direction of the organization. But if you brought in Chandler Jones and Akeem Hicks at defensive end and at defensive tackle, I think you significantly improve your pass rush overall, and you make that group a bad mamma jamma. I mean, I really, really think that you get after teams and really improve that group.
All right. Hype train coming up at 1:15. Is it a teardown offseason for the Seahawks? That's going to be one of my questions for you guys. First, though, Pete Carroll reportedly has a meeting with Jody Allen. If you're a fly on the wall in that meeting, what are you hoping to hear? That's next.